Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Bhai Bhag, Bhakti Vedanta ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Granthara Shinam Bhagavatam ki, Jai Nitai Gopremanam ki. Thank you all for coming. Did anyone not get the last week? The information about the submissions policies, like that. You didn't get it? Okay. You didn't get it?
I was listening to the first class probably, and the volume is low.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
No, not everyone needs it. Trying to shake it. I see the Roger. Crazy. Russell, you didn't get it? Yeah. So pass one to Russell, pass one to Simon. Simon and Russell. Anyone else need it? Huh? For who? You? Okay. So you should understand, everyone listen, you should understand the course ethos. You just read that, and that will give you the basic information of what to do if you are not able to attend your exam for some reason. Hand in your open book exam on time, perform your oral presentation on time, or appear for your closed book examination. You must follow the rules which are given on this sheet. These are the course guidelines. So it is necessary that you follow these things. There's also an application for extension. Is that going to be on the website? Or?
I
didn't
put it.
Yeah. Have you got it? Or? There's also an application for extension. If you do, if you cannot hand in any of your exams on time, you need to get this sheet off me, right? And you need to fill that out and give that to me. You have to have basically good reasons. It says here, reasons that will be approved, such things as doctor certificates, medical reasons, or if you're travelling out of the country or things like that. Otherwise you should be there for your exams like that. Okay? You don't have the sheet? So, you didn't get this last week either, so. Okay, pass it. Everyone just move forward a touch. So pass that to little Maya Radhika. Pass that to Yogi. Okay. Thank you all for coming to the Bhakti Vedanta course. Very nice to have you all here. What else do we need? Sydney on the phone. You there, Sharon Mukhi?
Yes, Prabhu. Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so I also have some exams. All the people who handed them in late, I had to mark them. So they're now available for you. Shekhar, it's yourself. Shekhar. Put it to Bandhu. 1 minute. Sita Raja. 1 minute. Rasa Vilasini. Oh yeah, that's right. And this is Ananda Balobo. Okay. See, that's it. Okay. Now, so these are the open book topics for the first section. Canto 7, chapters 1 to 5. Take one, pass it on. I'm going to take one of these. These are your open book topics. Now, make note of this. Your open book topics are due to be handed in to me on the 12th of April. What day is that? 12th of April. There's no more of this late business. You know, this late business we've had for the last 7 years?
It's Friday.
Like that? It's a Friday, okay. What's the Monday after that?
15th.
Okay. So you have until April the 15th. Anything after April 15th will not be accepted unless you fill in your form and get permission. So you've got 2 months' notice. Hands up if you think 2 months' notice is fair and enough time to complete your open book examination. Wow, 100%, except those people didn't put their hands up. Okay. So that means they're all due by April 15th at the latest. After that, if they come later than April 15th, I think according to the course standards, you start losing 5% per day or something on your marks, you will be deducted. Your marks will be deducted. You know? There is no more Mr. Nice Guy in this course. I'm now following the Board of Examination standards of this con. So I, even though I'm a very soft person by nature, I can no longer act in my constitutional position of being very soft and lenient. I now have to be very strict and very hard on all of you. Because I'm representing the Board of Examinations of ISKCON. These are the standards. So if you do hand it in after April 15th, you will start losing marks for every day that's late. That's the standard. I have to follow it. I've been told I have to follow this since from now on. So, and if you need an extension, you have to come to me. You have to discuss the matter. If it's deemed acceptable, and mainly it means medical reasons or if you're flying out of the country or some emergency, but if it's any small reason, then basically it won't be accepted. So they're the standards. Is everyone happy with that? Hands up if you're happy with that. Wow, it's such a happy group. Most of you are happy. Per day, Shaker. But for you, because you're having so many late things from the last section, it's 10% per day. Okay. You have a special category. It's called 10% per day. And every time you make one of those comments, it goes to 15%. Okay, you're now 20%. If you hand them in early?
Yes.
Yeah, no. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. We're not that merciful. Okay, so we'll keep this together. Everyone has that. That's good. Your KMBs, I haven't selected them yet. I'll get them to you next week. I'm sorry. I should have had them done by now, but...
In the handbook, there is some KMBs.
The KMBs are all listed in the back of the handbook, but I have to select which ones there are, because for the seventh canto, there are many verses which Prabhupada quoted, whereas in the eighth canto, there's very few verses. There's a chair over here. Prabhuji. Is Mataji there also? Mahatma?
Yeah.
Oh, she's there? Okay. Can everyone move forward a touch, or maybe can move that way or something? More people coming. Mahatma and Mataji are going to need chairs. And, hey, can someone get one more chair? Yeah, you can sit there. There's another chair there that can be used. And we'll get one more because Mother's just coming as well. Sorry it's taking so long today, Sharon Mookie.
That's okay, Prabhu.
Because there's a lot of official course things we have to take care of, so we'll start in the middle. Okay. So one more chair for Mataji also. Oh. Yeah, one more. Okay. Might need one. Okay. So I will give you your KMBs next week. I'm sorry, I should have had them done that by now. But then you'll have around 2 months to learn them, so I don't think it'll be a problem. It'll only be three or four, so I think it'll be okay. Canto 8, there are very few verses that are listed as key memory verses. Canto 7, there are many. So there's a good chance that we'll use some of Canto 7 and Canto 8 also. but I just have to select which ones because there's many, many in Canto 7 which are important verses. Is that okay? So next week I'll get them to you. Okay, so now we'll begin. So on the board I have written up, Amal, just push that part, yeah, push that back, because I can't see the board, push that back. Oh, it doesn't go further? So we can create more of an angle. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, thank you. So on the board you will see Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, he begins by enunciating or explaining some of the topics for the seventh canto, some of the themes which we must understand for the seventh canto. So he says that in the seventh canto there are three types of devotees which are glorified. He says that in the first 10 chapters the Shuddha Bhakta is glorified. The pure devotee is glorified. That is Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj is an example of a Shuddha Bhakta, which means a pure devotee. So he will be glorified in the first 10 chapters. And we'll see an example of pure devotional service, which is what all of us are aspiring for. That will be explained in the life of Prahlad Maharaj and his teachings in the first 10 chapters. The last 5 chapters will break the canto up into five chapter groupings or departments. So there'll be 3 examinations, one for the first 5 chapters, one for the second 5 chapters, and then for the third 5 chapters. The third 5 chapters, the third group, chapters 11 to 15, it's a conversation between Narada and Yudhishthira. So Narada is instructing about Varnashram Dharma. It's a very interesting and important and relishable instructions which will be there. Many very wonderful instructions are there. So, in that section, those final 5 chapters, we'll hear about Mishra Bhakti. Mishra Bhakti means those who are mixed with Karma Mishra Bhakti and Jnana Mishra Bhakti, whose devotion is tinged with Karma or with Jnana, which means, generally it means people are attached to the process of Karma or Jnana in their Bhakti. They're performing devotional service, but they've got a strong inclination towards Karma. You see sometimes devotees, generally from an Indian background, because us Westerners, we don't really understand anything about rituals or karma or these things, karma kanda, we don't really understand this. But you see sometimes devotees, they join the movement, they join ISKCON, but they're still very ritualistically inclined. They want to perform all the rituals, they want to do all the right things, they still want to worship Krishna, but then maybe Ganesh is involved and also Shiva is still there and, you know, like so many things. So the ritual, so this is Karma Mishra Bhakti. Bhakti is there, but there is a mixing. And very attached to the rituals, which aren't really the rituals of bhakti. The rituals of bhakti, or the important components of bhakti, are explained by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Those 64 items of bhakti is what Rupa Goswami has taken from all the Vedic literatures, and he said these things are the important things, and to attain Shuddha Bhakti or pure devotional service, we must concentrate on those things, exclusively actually. But we see the people who are coming from, I'll answer your question in a minute, but we see people who are coming from a background where all these rituals have been a part of their upbringing, they still sometimes are very attached to these things. So we have to be careful about these kind of karma mishra, or this mixing of karma in with our bhakti, because it weakens our bhakti. Of course, we see in the example of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself that when his father passed away, he went to Gaya to perform the Pinda or the Shraddha ceremony. Now you can say, well, that wasn't necessarily pure devotional service, because he was doing some ritualistic ceremony, maybe. He was worshipping Vishnu, that's the point. But still, it may, maybe you could argue, well, that wasn't necessary. That's not in and of itself an item of bhakti. So the Acharyas explain that when Mahaprabhu went there to Gaya, he was absorbed in Krishna Katha. So even though sometimes we're in this world, we are obliged to do certain things. Our parents pass away, we are obliged to perform some ritual on their behalf. But because we are devotees, even while doing all those things, we're absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna. And we're still absorbed in bhakti. So even though those things are done, but it doesn't obscure our devotion. It's still Shuddha Bhakti. It's still pure devotion. So it doesn't contaminate our consciousness. So we can still do those things, we can still perform those activities, but because we're devotees, we're more interested, for example, like our parents will pass away, we'll take the ashes to Mayapur, for example. And during the Gaurapanim festival, Jnanivas Prabhu, he goes to the Ganga, and on one day, all the devotees, because so many devotees will come with ashes that they want to put into the Ganga of their deceased relatives or friends, then he'll do them all together on one day. So you have a pure devotee who's performing the ceremony with the idea to liberate the or give the deceased relative or friend the benefit of having his ashes touching the Ganga, right, in the holy dharma of Mayapur, right? And we do it with a remembrance of Gauranga, invoking Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So it doesn't obscure our bhakti. So the Acharyas explain that we can perform those things and it doesn't have to obscure our bhakti. However, many people still get attached to this karmakanda kind of mentality. Oh, I have to do this ritual and I have to do that ritual and we've done this for so long and my parents want me to do this and, you know. So all these things may not be necessary. When we do weddings, for example, the wedding should be a Vaishnava wedding. We have our Vaishnava standards, things that we do, like you see on the weddings we do here, when the devotees get married, the things that Gangeshwara Prabhu or Aniruddha Prabhu will get them to do, these are within the Vaishnava tradition. We don't do all the extra things, because in the Hindu weddings or the Indian weddings, there are so many things which can be done. And we know the famous example we've spoken about in the past, about the cat under the basket. You know, someone, there was a cat was running around in the wedding. So the grandmother, she grabbed the basket and put the cat under the basket so it wouldn't disturb the wedding. But then, the next wedding that was in the village, someone saw there was a cat under the basket, so someone said, where's the cat? So they went and got a cat, they got the basket, put it under the basket, and it was good luck for the wedding. So now for hundreds of years, everyone's been putting cats under baskets in the wedding because it gives good luck, but it doesn't mean anything. So devotees are not interested in those things. You know, sometimes you go to weddings in India or people become attached or we have to do this thing, we have to do that thing. But how does it give pleasure to Krishna? How is it connected to Krishna? That's how we judge these things. So Kama Mishra Bhakti is there and also Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Jnana Mishra Bhakti means you may be performing devotional service but you have a tendency to, for example, towards impersonalism or the path of impersonalism, which means the study of Vedanta, for example. You're very highly philosophically inclined. You like to study everything. You like to analyze that this world is false by the neti-neti process of Sankhya. So you're very analytical and you are doing these things. You are a devotee, but still you're very attached to jnana or cultivating knowledge and understanding this world is false. And that is obscuring your bhakti to some degree. Or it is overwhelming your bhakti to some degree. You're very attached to like an impersonal kind of background. Does it make sense? I don't think I've explained that well enough.
Like that. What's that?
It just means that we may be too much inclined towards the impersonalistic path. Or that we've come from a background where we're very much interested in, for example, Sankhya philosophy, which means studying things and trying to analyze so many different Vedic literatures to understand the difference between matter and spirit, which is good, but it may overwhelm our bhakti. It may become too prominent within our practice. I still don't think I've explained it well enough. But
in Bhagavad Gita, Japan, and Prabhupada experienced this. Jnana Mishra Bhakti as
attached to metals recognition. So we are attached to the bhakti, but we are doing because of the knowledge, we are doing metals recognition at the same time, so that is Ramesh Bhakti.
The systematic study that we have is Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaidya, Bhakti Vaidya. Would that be classified? Someone who has interest in those three. Would that be classified as
Jnana Mishra? No, no, because it's the studying we're doing here is completely supporting our bhakti or our devotion to Krishna.
Okay.
So it doesn't obscure the bhakti in any way. It means when someone gets too, like, you know, maybe analytical or even... yeah, I'm not getting the inspiration to explain this. What's that? Yeah, that's a very nice explanation that Russ has given about that. That the person is too much absorbed in detachment. This is like Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Too much impersonalism, too much detachment, like that. Too much emphasis on those things, which obscures your natural devotion to Krishna. Too much emphasis on things which are actually unrelated to Krishna. Too much renunciation. That's actually a good way of understanding it. Someone who gets too much into renunciation as opposed to devotion to Krishna. And sometimes you see devotees become like that. And too much is all, oh, I have to renounce this, I have to renounce that, I can't speak to women, I can't do this, I can't, and become very unnatural. It actually obscures our bhakti. That's one part of it which is a good way to understand it. I think so.
Rupa Goswami also says in his matter of devotion that the eligibility to become a devotee for the practice bhakti is not to be too attached, not to be too detached. The too detached person also doesn't become a devotee.
Yeah. A too attached person is a Kama Mishra Bhakta, and a too detached person is a Jnana Mishra Bhakta. I think so. Speak loudly, Russell. Yeah, so in terms of worshipping the sun god, he's not a devata, but he is Surya Narayan. He is God himself. He's a form of the Lord. So a Vaishnava can worship Surya Narayan as a deity. So that's not obscuring bhakti. He's not considered a demigod. And your second question is about how devotees perform samskaras. There are 10 samskaras which people must perform. Right? Gavadan samskara, before the child is born. When the child is born, then at 6 months we offer the first grains, first time we cut the hair, first time they go to school. There are so many different samskaras. But once again, we perform those things, but while doing those activities, the emphasis is on Krishna. We're absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna. It's leading us to Krishna. So it doesn't obscure our bhakti as long as Krishna is in the center of the activity.
Just a question. When you were explaining Karma Mishra Bhakti, the examples you used were related to demigod worship and the ceremony process. Are there the only two types of business? What about those who work and have bhakti? Will they fall into this category? Those who are attached to it? Will they fall into it?
You mean people who work for Southern Cross but still are devotees? Are they Karma Mishra Bhaktis? No, they're devotees. It's Shuddha Bhakti. If your activity, just like now, this is Shuddha Bhakti, this activity is Shuddha Bhakti.
Okay.
Right, because we're hearing Bhagavatam. Right? Rupa Goswami says there are 64 items of Bhakti.
Yeah.
And then he, at the end, he says five of them are most powerful. One of them is hearing Bhagavatam.
Okay.
So this is Shuddha Bhakti, it's not mixed. So how do you make your job Shuddha Bhakti? Right? Then you offer some of the phal to Krishna. Right? Some of the wage, it goes to Krishna, directly to Krishna. Then it becomes Shuddha Bhakti.
In the retreat, Madhavananda Prabhu gave the example of Yajna Brahmanas, how they were performing all the rituals and everything perfectly, the mantras and all the perfect ways, and they were worshipping Vishnu directly. But when Krishna sent the coward boys, they couldn't understand because they were so much engaged in ritualistic ways. Like they forget what the purpose behind the rituals was, to satisfy Lord. So they said no, they did not have time for feeding the coward boys. So that even the practice may be perfect and everything we might be doing perfectly, but if we forget the goal behind it. Also, Sachinandana Maharaj explained, like, while we are chanting, we ask for the service. But if some service comes and we say, no, we don't have time, we have chanted our rounds, then our chanting is not effective because we have forgotten the purpose behind it. So, it might not be directly related, but the yajna...
No, that's good. No. Even the second point is good. But Maharaj also pointed out chanting our rounds is our first service. Like that. A lot of devotees put down their beads for any reason. Yeah, any service comes along, they'll start doing that instead of chanting their rounds. But the first service is to chant the rounds and chant them properly. So, but I understand your point. That's a good point. So, cross the first and then. Yeah, it's pure devotional service. In other words, all these people are working in their jobs. They work for Telstra and Southern Cross and all these exalted institutions in Kali Yuga. Right? Such special, special places which are benefiting the world in such important ways. Yeah, but these people are pure devotees, that's the point. That's the point. You had a point?
No, it's a question that really is a Shuddha Bhakta. Because of these two, the love or Dharma. So now, worshipping the Lord in love and worshipping the Lord and in Dharma. So, are they also Shuddha Bhakta, or which category they fall under?
Who?
The devotees, like the other people, like, they worship for Vishnu in the form of heaven reverence.
The other sampradayas,
those who worship with awe and reverence.
Yeah, so the four bona fide sampradayas, they're all performing Shuddha Bhakti. There are four bona fide sampradayas, they all are performing Shuddha Bhakti, pure Bhakti. But some of that Bhakti leads to Goloka, some of it leads to Vaikuntha. For example, what we're hearing about now in the seventh canto, in the first 10 chapters, is Shuddha Bhakti. But it's not Shuddha Bhakti that leads to Goloka Vrindavan. It's Shuddha Bhakti that leads to Vaikuntha. So we're not yet at the highest level of Shuddha Bhakti. This is pure devotional service by Rupa Goswami's definition. But it's not the most perfect type of devotional service. That is Braja Bhakti. But that'll be spoken of in the 10th canto. Okay. So let me... Okay. Yeah. From memory, I think it's a jiva who is empowered, like that. He's Vishnu, yeah. It's sometimes the statements go in both ways. When it comes to Surya Dev, sometimes the statement. Yeah, well, you can see him as Vishnu Tattva, but just like all of the different Vishnu Tattva, they're not as powerful as the original form of Krishna. They don't have full manifestation. But we can see him as Vishnu Tattva. Possibly. I'm not 100% sure. Usually I think when we see him, I don't know if he has four hands. I think it's more like two hands. I don't know a lot about Suryadev, so I can't. Okay, so let me just finish summarizing. So we will hear about Mishra Bhaktas in the final five chapters, and we will also hear about Jnanis who are tinged with bhakti. So they are Jnanis, but because they are tinged with bhakti, their destination becomes the Brahma Jyoti. Because they are, you could say, Brahmavadis. But in their desire to attain the impersonal Brahman, there must be some bhakti there. They must perform some bhakti. And it is the bhakti which carries them to the destination. It is not the impersonal conception that actually leads them to their destination. But because it's mainly jnana, and it's mainly impersonal understanding, they go to Brahman. The Jnana Mishra Bhaktis and the Karma Mishra Bhaktis, this will lead to Paramatma understanding. And the Shuddha Bhaktis, they realize, they develop Prema and they realize Bhagavan. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is pointing this out. Now he makes one other point about the seventh canto. He says in the seventh canto, besides these three types of devotees being glorified, he says there are two types of uti. The word uti in Sanskrit means inclination. He says that there are two types of personalities who have two different types of inclination who will be described. One has an auspicious inclination, one has an inauspicious inclination. The inauspicious inclination is Hiranyakashipu. He has an inauspicious inclination. This will be described. In other words, he is an asura. Now, why is he an asura? It is explained this is inborn. And actually, this is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, that people are born with this demoniac nature. It can be seen from birth. Examples are like King Vena, we've seen already, demoniac personalities. Shishupal, yeah. So these personalities, they will be described. Hiranyakashipu is a very special personality because he's actually an associate with the Lord. But still, by our conditioning in the material world, by associating with the material energy as a Nitya Bhata living entity for lifetime after lifetime, we can develop a very strong demoniac nature. Right? Very strong demoniac nature. This can come. It's not our original nature, but by association with the material energy and with other demoniac persons in this material world, under the influence of false ego and the modes of nature, we can develop a very strong demoniac mentality. This is seen in this world even to this day. Of course, we see it in Hiranyakashipu, we see it in Hiranyaksha, we see it in Ravana, we see it in Dantavakra, we see it Kumbhakarna, we see it in Dantavakra, we see it in Shishapa, we saw it in Jago and Madai. We're seeing it to this day, right now. It's still there within this world. No, that's wrong. It's not the will of the Lord at all. It's the misuse of the jiva's independence. Krishna is only facilitating it. It's not Krishna's will that people become demoniac.
Are the atheists in this category?
Yes. Yeah. An atheist is a demoniac. It's a demoniac consciousness. If you don't believe in God, that's demoniac. Like that. So we're seeing, even today, what is the main headline on the news today? North Korea has been testing nuclear devices. Demoniac. Right? This is a rogue state. Right? One of the places in the world where there is demoniac consciousness taking place. Right. What's that? It's actually dangerous. It's very dangerous. There's something beginning to brew, I think, in the material energy, which we may not have seen in our lifetimes, but we'll see where that goes. Also, I watched a documentary the other day about the Twin Towers coming down. You know, those 9/11, when the towers came down. So I watched the document. I've seen different documentaries over the last 10 years because they make documentaries saying it was done by their own people. There's certain people in the American government who did that. And then there are others that say, no, it was done at their own. But I've seen one documentary, which was on the Age's website, theage.com. They showed this documentary. It's completely conclusive. It's completely been done by inside America. They haven't worked out who's done it yet, but it's been done. That's demoniac. Yeah, this is Asuric consciousness. You know, America brought their own towers down, right, so that they could start this war in Iraq, Afghanistan, and there's many other things which were achieved by that activity. But as a result, thousands of people died. And this is demoniac, you know. And I was actually shocked that this consciousness is amongst human society. It's very difficult to accept. But it's not just here in the Bhagavatam. It's not just theoretical. It's on this earth right now. There are demoniac personalities on this earth right now. They've been there in recent history, and they're on the earth right now. So this is inborn. This is because of envy of God, and it turns into something which is actually asuric, which Krishna explains in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It's demoniac, like that. So we will see that in this canto. It's been there since the beginning of the universe, because that's why people come. They leave the spiritual world because they want to be separate from Krishna. But the danger is in the material energy, and that's why Mahaprabhu says, asat sangha tyaga. Vaishnava achara. You have to be very careful, right? Because we could go off the track, and we could become, you know, a long way away from Krishna. It's possible. It's not impossible. The material energy is very powerful. I don't think that will happen to any of us, but it's possible. Living entities become demoniac by association. Now, also, Uti, the other inclination which is described in this canto is auspicious. And where do we see the auspicious inclination? That is in Prahlad Maharaj, right? Very auspicious. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, where does this come from? Where does someone get an auspicious inclination or an auspicious personality? It comes from the mercy of devotees. It comes from associating with devotees. Right? And now, who did Prahlad associate with? Narada. While he was in the womb. Right? Narada was instructing him in the womb before he even came out. And because of that association, he was born as Sri Prahlad. Right? The pure Amala Vaishnava. Right? So by our association, Prabhupada said this right in this room. Right? He was sitting there probably. Or he was sitting there. He was sitting somewhere in this room. There's a conversation when he's in Melbourne, in this room, and Prabhupada says, by your association, you become a drunkard, or by your association, you become a Vaishnava. It's all association. We are only products of our association. That's all we are. Anything we are, and actually, Hiranyakashipu actually makes some very good points. As we go through the seventh canto, he actually says some very wise things. Right? But because he's Hiranyakashipu, he gets the final teaching is mixed. Like he makes the wrong conclusion. But along the way, he actually says a very wise thing. He actually says to Prahlad that we are like a crystal. So you see downstairs when we're on the chandelier in the theatre, there are crystals. So according to the light coming from different directions, then you will see different things on the crystal. From one side, from where you're sitting, you may see red. From my side, I'll see green or blue. So it's all about association. Who we associate with. Right? So if we associate with devotees, we become a devotee. If we associate with non-devotees, we become non-devotees. Material desires spring up in our consciousness. Rupa Goswami points all this out in the Upadeshamrita. Jana Sangas, he says, be very careful. And in the next verse, right? He says, Satogrita, you have to associate with the saints. It's devotional life is all about this point. This is the pivot. Right? We go upwards, right, when we associate with the Vaishnavas, and we go downwards when we associate with the material energy. So this is what the seventh canto will cover. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says this is the summary. So you should memorize this, you will be examined on this. This will be definitely a part of what you'll meet when you're examined in the first exam, the closed book exam. Any points?
So you saw in the yesterday that there is no to experience severity.
To what?
To experience severity.
Chivalry. Yeah.
Lord comes to this world.
Yeah.
And I think Ravan and Hiranyakashipu and yeah, they all four came. The guy in Madai, they all came because God wants to experience memory. So when you say it was Hiranyakashipu who was demoniac, that was a little
bit. Yeah, that particular case. That particular
all
case.
Before,
yeah. That because that's giant Vijay.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's a little bit different to us.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before. Because
okay.
Because
that I accept. You are right. In that particular case, you are correct. But generally, if you look at demoniac personalities,
yeah,
it's not because the Lord has sent them.
Yeah, that's right.
But for those two, it is true.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, tonight we're going to go from verses 9 to 15. So we'll continue now. The all-pervading personality of Godhead exists within the heart of every living being, and an expert thinker can perceive how he is present there to a large or small extent. Just as one can understand the supply of fire and wood, the water in a water pot, or the sky within a pot, one can understand whether a living entity is a demon or a demigod by understanding that living entity's devotional performances. A thoughtful man can understand how much a person is favored by the Supreme Lord by seeing his action. Ajoy, you like to read?
In Bhagavad Gita 10.41, the Lord says, Yad yad viputi pat satvam, srimad bhujitam evava, tat tat yeva gatcha tam, nama tejo musa sambhava. Know that all beautiful, glorious and mighty creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. We have the practical experience of seeing that one person is able to do very wonderful things, whereas another cannot do those things, those same things, and cannot even do things that require only a little common sense. Therefore, how much a devotee has been favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be tested by the activities the devotee has performed. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord also says, Yesham sasa yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam Padami Buddhi Yogam Sam Yenamam Upayanti. To those who are constantly devoted and who worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. This is very practical. A teacher instructs the student if the student is capable of taking more and more instructions. Otherwise, in spite of being instructed by the teacher, the student cannot make strides in his understanding. This has nothing to do with partiality. When Krishna says, Tesham Sasa Yuktanam, Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, Tadami Buddhi Yogam Sam, this indicates that Krishna is prepared to give Bhakti Yoga to everyone, but one must be capable of receiving it. That is the secret. Thus, when a person exhibits wonderful devotional activities, the thoughtful man understands that Krishna has been more favorable to his devotee.
Keep going.
This is not difficult to understand. But envious persons do not accept that Krishna has bestowed his favor upon a particular devotee in accordance with his advanced position. Such foolish persons become envious and try to minimize an advanced devotee's activities. This is not Vaishnavism. A Vaishnava should appreciate the service rendered to the Lord by other Vaishnavas. Therefore, a Vaishnava is described in Srimad Bhagavatam as Nirmatsara. Vaishnavas are never envious of other Vaishnavas or of anyone else, and therefore they are called Nirmat Saranam Satam.
One more.
as Bhagavad Gita informs us, one can understand how one is saturated with sattva-gun, rajogun or tamogun. In the examples given herewith, fire represents the mode of goodness. One can understand the constitution of a container for wood, petrol or other inflammable substances by the quantity of the fire. Similarly, water represents rajogun, the mode of passion. A small skin and the vast Atlantic Ocean both contain water, and by seeing the quantity of water in a container, one can understand the size of the container. The sky represents the mode of ignorance. The sky is present in a small earthen pot and also in outer space. Thus, by proper judgment, one can see who is a devata or demigod and who is an asura, yaksha or rakshasa according to the quantities of sattva-gun, rajogun and tamogun. One cannot judge whether a person is a devata, an asura or a rakshasa by seeing him, but a sane man can understand this by the activity such a man performs. A general description is given in the Padma Puran. Vishnu bhaktas mato daiva asuras tad viparyaya. A devotee of Lord Vishnu is a demigod, whereas an asura or yaksha is just the opposite. An asura is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Instead, for his sense gratification, he is a devotee of the demigod, bhutas, pretas and so on. Thus, one can judge who is a devata, who is a rakshasa and who is an asura by how they conduct their activities.
Thank you. So what is Prabhupada saying here? Yeah, that's already explained by Kapila Dev in the third canto. He said devotional service can be in the mode of goodness, it can be in the mode of passion, it can be in the mode of ignorance, and each has its qualities. Means one of the modes will be present at one time, but then you'll see sometimes we are in the mode of passion, sometimes we are in the mode of ignorance, sometimes we are in the mode of goodness. They're all fighting for supremacy. It's Krishna's just the Bhagavad Gita. just watch them and see. You'll see. So what is Prabhupada doing here? In the beginning of this purport, right? He's attacking his god brothers. Because many of them were envious of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada is pointing out that he was doing things, because Prabhupada is being self-effacing or very humble, but there is a history there that he is not saying that it's him directly, but actually that's what he's referring to. He said when a Vaishnava is doing something and then the others are putting him down, then that is just envy. And Prabhupada would point that out, because he didn't always receive cooperation from his god brothers. And Prabhupada actually wanted to cooperate with them. He wanted them to all join together. He said this on different occasions when he would meet with them. He said, let us all preach together. But the fact was, it was Prabhupada who had the money and the manpower to do it. He even said at one point in time to several members of the Gaudiya Math, he said, you join with me and we'll preach together. But he said, when we go out and distribute books, he said, we have to distribute my books. Right? And then they would not agree to do like that with Prabhupada. But Prabhupada understood his position. No one else did what he did. And when he came back to India, and then he was being criticized by some of his god brothers. They were actually criticizing him for certain things he had done. Like he started the Brahmacharini Ashram, which was not there in the Vedas. There were certain adjustments that Prabhupada made for time, place and circumstance. An acharya can make adjustments for time, place and circumstance. That's what makes an acharya an acharya. That's why he's qualified. Because he can do certain things which others cannot do. So Prabhupada made these adjustments. But he's got some of his god brothers criticized him. So then when he was driving from Calcutta to Mayapur in the car, he was with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And he said that they may criticize me. But he said that if they do criticize me for the things that I have done while spreading Krishna consciousness, he said, then you tell them, if they say, you know, your spiritual master has done like this, then you reply to them, how many books have you distributed? How many temples have you opened? And how many disciples have you made? And then we will understand who is the actual disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Prabhupada is pointing out here that he was being sometimes criticized. And Prabhupada was pointing out this is envy. Even though there are examples, one particular god brother in particular, Prabhupada actually sent some of his Western disciples who first went to India to be trained. He said, you go and associate with this god brother and receive training. And that god brother, he re-initiated some of Prabhupada's disciples to make them his disciples. And when Prabhupada found out, he was very upset. He said, this is just envy. He said, this is just envy. I've gone all the way to America to do this preaching. No one else has done it. And it was interesting because that particular god brother who did that, he'd also been sent overseas by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada said he achieved nothing. But Prabhupada was so successful, but there was envy there. And there was a lot of opposition from his god brothers on different occasions like that. So in this particular purport, Prabhupada is pointing this out. That we should not be envious of other Vaishnavas. We should see, because Prabhupada's god brothers, sometimes they were like that with Prabhupada. Even though he was clearly such a successful preacher, but sometimes they would try to belittle his position. But it's interesting because he had a conversation with His Holiness Sridhar Swami, who Prabhupada was very close to. And Sridhar Swami, Prabhupada actually said, he is my Shiksha Guru. He's very exalted god brother of Prabhupada, very exalted disciple Bhakti Saraswati Thakur. But Sridhar Swami, they had a conversation, I think it was about 74, it was about 75 or 76. They met in Navadvip. Prabhupada went across to Sridhar Swami's mat, and he was speaking with him. And Sridhar Swami said to him, he said, actually, you are the Acharya for the whole Gaudiya mission. He said, it's actually you. So many of them understood Prabhupada's position. He was unique amongst all the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta. But some out of envy, they would bring Prabhupada down. So Prabhupada's pointing this out, that Vaishnavas should not be envious towards other Vaishnavas, particularly when we see, and we should look at ourselves, when we see another devotee being successful in his preaching and his service, we should not cause difficulty for that devotee. Or we should not criticize that devotee. But we should bless that devotee, and we should support that devotee. When you see another devotee who is doing more than you, you should assist that devotee. Right? Even you may be doing so much yourself, but if you meet another devotee who is doing more, you should assist him. You should become his servant. Not that we should become envious and we should criticize others. This is material consciousness. So Prabhupada's pointing out here that we should be very careful about criticizing the other devotees. Because Prabhupada, he received that that attitude himself. So Prabhupada understood what it felt like to be criticized by others unnecessarily. Instead of supporting him and helping him to spread Krishna consciousness, which they could have done, they tried to actually cause difficulties for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada's pointing out, we should not be like this. Prabhupada insisted that when he left this world, he said, the proof of how much you love me is how much you will cooperate after I am gone. Prabhupada did not want the same thing to happen that happened in the Gaudiya Math. He didn't want that same situation. And Prabhupada actually said himself, he said that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was not satisfied when he left this world. He was not satisfied because the Gaudiya Math, there was all this infighting. And as soon as he left, it actually became a court case. Two parties in the Gaudiya Math actually took each other to court, and it went on for years. And Prabhupada criticized them. He said they sold the printing press to fight the court case. What was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's main emphasis? It was printing and distributing books. They sold the printing press so that they could get money to fight the court case. And what happened at the end of the court case? One of the sides won. And then, as Prabhupada said, then they just sat in the Gaudiya Math and ate chapatis. Right? Once they won the court case, then they just sat there, no preaching. So Prabhupada was very critical. He said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he left, he was not satisfied. But he said, because Prabhupada said, now I am leaving, he said, I'm very satisfied. And he said, at least maintain what I have begun. At least maintain it, Prabhupada said. He said, at least maintain what I've begun. And Prabhupada would be very happy, because it's not maintenance. ISKCON is not in maintenance mode. ISKCON is in expansion mode. Like that. So Prabhupada would be very satisfied. So we should all cooperate together. We should preach Krishna consciousness. Like that. There should not be envy and in-house fighting amongst the devotees. We should serve each other. Like that. Any points? How what?
How much mercy they are getting from the Lord, because without this mercy, others can do it.
Others what?
Without this mercy, I don't think we can advance anything.
Yeah. The Krishna Vina Shakti, it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when one is empowered by Krishna, then he can be successful in the preaching. So you see, if someone is successful in their preaching or their devotional service, this means they're being directly empowered by Krishna or blessed by Krishna. Not that. So we should not envy that person, but we should try to support them and serve them. Okay. So then, in the next two paragraphs of this purport, then Prabhupada emphasizes the same point which he emphasized at the end of the sixth canto, that devotional service is most effective when it's practiced in the mode of
goodness.
Sattva gun. For goodness sake. We should be in the mode of goodness. Devotional service in the mode of ignorance, what is the quality? There are many qualities, but what are some of the descriptions? Lazy? Yeah, very good.
Anger?
Yeah, very good. It actually says in the Bhagavatam, Kapila says, if someone's in the mode of ignorance is doing devotional service, he'll be a separatist. Which means he can't cooperate with the other devotees. Someone's in the mode of ignorance and he becomes angry all the time. Always angry at the other devotees. Always criticizing everyone else. Everyone else has a problem except for him. So this is the mode of ignorance. What is the mode of passion? What are the symptoms in the mode of passion? Devotional service.
Wanting recognition.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, wanting recognition. It's interesting because Kapiladev says that in the mode of passion, it's the same thing. You're a separatist. In other words, you want to be distinct amongst the other devotees. You want to be prominent amongst the other devotees. Instead of cooperating with everyone, becoming their servant, you want to be the prominent one. And you'll be very happy when you're in that position. So it's the same thing. And that strong desire for recognition in your service. Always want to be recognized. As long as I'm being recognized, I'm satisfied. As long as I'm benefiting from the service, I'm satisfied. In the mode of goodness, one is... And in the mode of goodness, it is very conducive for bhakti. Now, as we said, I think last night, or I said recently, probably last night then, how do we situate ourselves in the mode of goodness? Yeah, you have to rise early in the morning. Right? Because it's interesting, Prabhupada says that time is in the mode of ignorance, it's in the mode of passion, and it's in the mode of goodness. Right? When is time in the mode of passion? Yeah, these days it's pretty much 6:30 onwards. Everyone goes crazy. If you get on the Westgate Bridge at 7 in the morning, it's already a traffic jam. 7. Because my brother's just moved to the farm. He's now living with me at the farm. He moved there about a month ago. But he's still working here in Port Melbourne. So he has to drive every morning. So he's getting up at... He's leaving about 5:30 from the farm. He says if he leaves after 5:30, he hits a traffic jam when he gets to the Westgate Bridge. So he has to leave early just so he can get in and get out on time. Like that. So this is the mode of passion. People are so passionate these days. And then it's all through the day. Mode of ignorance means in the evening time. As soon as it starts getting dark, everyone gets tamasic. Right? You'll see on the weekend in the St. Kilda Festival. Right? As soon as the sun goes down, they get tamasic. Right? Just drink more and like that. And everything just becomes mode of ignorance. Becomes very prominent like that. Sattva Gun is... in the early hours of the morning, especially the most effective time for devotional service for the Brahma Muhurta, which means 1.5 hours before the sun rises. 2 Muhurtas, 2 48-minute periods, which is 1 hour 36 minutes before the sun rises, that is the most auspicious time for practicing bhakti. It's called Brahma Muhurta. Like that. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says we should hear and chant in the morning, in that Brahma Muhurta period, because that is when the mind is very peaceful, and it will be very easy for you to fix your mind on hearing and chanting about Krishna. And then he also says at the end of the day, which is what we're doing now, when it's all finished and we've got it all out of our system, then our minds are peaceful again and we can actually hear something about Krishna. And I actually find myself quite often my rounds are better in the evening, because I usually chant my rounds in 2 groups. You know, I like to chant them all in the morning if I can, 16, but it doesn't usually happen for different reasons. But then, usually I chant my second lot of rounds at the end of the day, and I usually find, this is just me, I'm not saying you should do this, but for myself, in that second block in the day, it's usually my rounds are the best. Because I've got it all out of my system, I've done my service for the day, right, and then I can just chant and just I'm peaceful. Even sometimes in the morning, it's 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm chanting, but the mind's already starting to race. If I have to do this today and that today and that today, and I have to have that meeting and that. And practically, you're organizing your entire job and all the things you have to do today while you're chanting your rounds. Does that ever happen to you? You ever had that experience? So we have to overcome that inattentiveness while chanting. So the early part of the day and the later part of the day, like this kind of time, very conducive for devotional activities. And you see, for example, in Mayapur, that's what everyone does. Everyone gets up for Mangalati, performs their activities in Brahma Muhurta, and then at the end of the day, the sun goes down in India at a normal time, 6 o'clock, it all gets dark again, and everyone heads back into the temple to see Radha Madhava, and then finish the day absorbed in hearing and chanting. So these are the best times. And actually, the holy dham at night time is there's a very special atmosphere there. When I was in Mayapur and Vrindavan, especially Mayapur, when it gets dark and it becomes very sacred and very peaceful in the evening, I would go to my guru's samadhi and chant my rounds. It was very, very blissful.
All night they'll be shouting, really loudly, Radhe, 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 all night.
Hmm.
We were there for 1.5 months and spent 6-7 weeks.
I saw you there. I met you a few times. Okay. So let us continue. Go to verse 10. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead creates different types of bodies, offering a particular body to each living entity according to his character and fruitive actions, the Lord revives all the qualities of material nature, sattva-gun, raja-gun, and tamagun. Then as the Supersoul, he enters each body and influences the qualities of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. Using sattva-gun for maintenance, raja-gun for creation, and tamagun for annihilation. So Prabhupada is pointing out in the purport that Krishna is in control of these things, but you cannot blame Krishna for what takes place in your life in terms of your karma. Now, we cannot blame Krishna and say, Krishna is doing this to me. Right? Whatever takes place in our life, that is simply because of our previous reactions. Now, Prabhupada points out, if we're situated in the mode of goodness, the reactions will be more subtle. But if you're more in passion or more in ignorance, you will suffer more when your karma comes. So therefore, by living in the mode of goodness, we reduce our karmic reactions like that. But we should understand that it's not Krishna who's doing this. It's just the material energy. Maya yakshena prakriti. Krishna is glancing on the material energy. He operates the whole thing. But he's not the one who's personally giving us all our karma. Although there's the super soul, he supervises everything. But he's not trying to make you suffer like that. People often blame God. When they're suffering, they blame God like that. But we should not do that. O great King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of the material and spiritual energies, who is certainly the creator of the entire cosmos, creates the time factor to allow the material energy and the living entity to act within the limits of time. Thus, the Supreme Personality is never under the time factor, nor under the material energy. O King, this time factor enhances the sattva gun. Thus, although the Supreme Lord is the controller, he favors the demigods, who are mostly situated in sattva gun. Then the demons, who are influenced by tamagun, are annihilated. The Supreme Lord induces the time factor to act in different ways, but he is never partial. Rather, his activities are glorious. Therefore, he is called Uru Shrava. Formerly, O King, when Maharaj Yudhishthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, the great sage Narada, responding to his inquiry, recited historical facts showing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always impartial, even when killing demons. In this regard, he gave a vivid example. So who are we going to hear about now? Shishupal. Okay. So who is Shishupal? Yeah, in the previous life, Shishupal and Dantavakra were? They were Hiranyakashipu. So we're about to hear about Hiranyakashipu. So we're hearing about another time when he appeared, and then we're going back to that previous incarnation. So this is all leading to the pastime of Hiranyakashipu. But we're hearing when Krishna deals with Hiranyakashipu and with Hiranyaksha, and then Kumbhakarna and Ravan, and then Dantavakra, and in all those incarnations, he's treating them exactly the same. He's just reciprocating with them, because that's what they want to do. They want to fight him, they want to kill him. So he says, okay, let's have a fight. He's enjoying it each time. But each time, because when they appeared the first time, they appeared at the end of Satya Yuga. At the Sanja between Satya Yuga and Treta Yuga. The second time they appeared was near the end of Treta Yuga. And the third time they appeared was in Dwapara Yuga. And the fourth time they appeared as Jagran Madai was in Kali Yuga. So there was one pastime how Narada, he took Ravana And he said, in your previous life, you were much more powerful. And Ravana said, how could I be more powerful? I'm so powerful now. How could I be more powerful? He said, come with me. And he took him and he showed him a mountain of gold. And he said, you see that mountain of gold? He said, that was your earring in your previous lifetime. So in his previous life, Ravana was Hiranyakashipu, or Hiranyaksha, and his earring, that's how much more powerful it was. So the most powerful demon in history was Hiranyakashipu. So we're about to hear about him. So the only person who could defeat him was Narasimha. And God had to give his full potency to destroy this demon. He was so powerful. He had the universe upside down. It said he'd just move his eyebrow and Indra would tremble. He just looked at him like that and Indra would begin to fall. Everyone was scared of him. He was so powerful. Hiranyakashipu. So we'll hear about him. What? I think it was Narad Muni. I think so. I've heard the story. Bali Maharaj? Showed him? Okay. And Bali Maharaj shows it to him. Okay. So it sounds like it's Bali Maharaj. I've only heard the story. I've never read it. It seems like Bali Maharaj shows it. I thought it was Narada. So. Okay, one more verse. O King, at the Rajasuya sacrifice, Maharaj Yudhishthira, the son of Maharaj Pandu, personally saw Shishupal merge into the body of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Therefore, struck with wonder, he inquired about the reason for this from the great sage Narada, who was seated there. While he inquired, all the sages present also heard him ask his question. So this pastime will be described in Canto 10. In Canto 10, we actually hear about the Rajasuya sacrifice, and Shishupal directly enters into Krishna's body in front of everyone. So this will just be a small description here of this, and then it will be described in the 10th canto. So we'll continue next week. Thank you all for coming. Srila Prabhupada ki.